independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
That's me, party people. Hope you're doing well on this beautiful Thursday. Watch a little NFL here, getting ready. Roger Goodell just walked out. It is a party like no other in Philadelphia. As young men are about to become millionaires, and they've officially announced it. Remember, there are two seasons in America. There is football season and waiting for football season, and in between there, this is like Easter, right? So when you're a kid, you've got Christmas, and then you've got that Easter. It's not as big as Christmas, but it's still pretty cool. It's official. The Cleveland Browns are on the clock again, as they usually are this time of year. Myles Garrett will be the number one pick, according to everybody. I was not, once again. I'm foretelling that I am not going to be the number one pick. I know, it's crazy. I thought I was going to be this year. I thought I was going to be a pick. I'm not going to be any of those things. That's kind of sad. What is really sad is we focus on a lot of crap. All right, you know, you listen to the talking heads of the world and all of these, you know, political, you know, people get on there, these 24-hour news cycles, and they pontificate about a bunch of crap, and they sit there and they yammer on all day, and they do all these kind of things. And they talk about stuff that really has very little to do with the reality of the world that most of us live in, right? Mike Flynn, nobody really cares. Did he do something wrong? By the looks of it, potentially, but what do you give a rat's ass about that, honestly? You sleep well at night. Well, what if, what? No, I don't care. It doesn't mean anything, right? You know, we worry about terrorism, right? Oh, my God, terrorism. We worry about it, and there's something we should think about and absolutely worry about, but the truth is the chances of you dying from terrorism are slim to none, right? It happens. It's horrible. But last year, and maybe producer Anthony, can you just see how many people were quote unquote killed in America by terrorism last year? But there are other things out there that we should worry about, that we absolutely need to look at, because there are epidemics that are real, that are very real in this country. The opioid epidemic is massive. It's huge. How big is it? They thought they knew. But now they believe they've underestimated it, and that the reports coming in are nowhere near what a lot of people thought. And that's not a good thing. It's not. And the difference, that the reason that this is getting brought up more so, in truth, it has crossed that line where a lot of times drug users were bottom of the barrel, right? They were bottom of the barrel people who were, you know, homeless, living on the fringes of society, people of color, nobody really cared, white trash, nobody gave two rips. But the opioid epidemic is big because it affects everybody. Rich, poor, white, black, Latino, doesn't matter. It affects everyone, kids and the old. And that's why it's getting this... this craziness about, like, we got to pay attention to this now. We got to pay attention to this. Right or wrong, the truth is we have to pay attention to it. And the fact that it's being underreported, supposedly 90 people a day. In fact, it's gotten to the point where opioid epidemic's gotten so bad that it's passing things that were once the predominant killers of people in America. Think about that. It's gaining on things that were higher on the list, and it's passing them, and it's only going to get worse.
Debbie Warfield's son, Spencer, died from a heroin overdose in 2012. Warfield blames OxyContin. She says that's where his addiction began.
OxyContin and heroin has taken such a toll on our family for the rest of our lives.
OxyContin. The difference is this isn't your quote-unquote normal drug dealers nowadays, right? You know who's a drug dealer? But many times not knowing. It's a doctor who's thinking they're doing something right, prescribing something. Sits inside mom and dad's cabinet. Kids take the opioids. They run out of opioids, and what do they turn to? They turn to heroin because it's cheap. They can get their hands on it without a prescription. And again, it hits everybody. It hits every single person. It does. Doesn't matter what color you are. Doesn't matter about any of those things. Every one of you listening tonight has had somebody, I'm sure, in your life that has struggled with drugs or alcohol, that has struggled in some way, shape, or form. And when you think about all of the stuff that's going on right now because of the opioids and the fact that last year, one of the great artists of our generation died because of an opioid addiction. And what do they find in his house? A bunch of pill bottles with other people's names on it. That is scary. That is really scary. But this is what we have here. And it's an epidemic. And these are the things that we should pay attention to. We worry about this. And they talk ad nauseum about it. Since 1975, about 3,900 people have been killed by terrorism. And that includes 9/11. On average, 74 people a year. That's on average. 74 people a year. That's Americans here. 90 people a day plus die from opioid addiction. Let that soak in when we sit here at nauseam and watch these guys for 24/7 talk about this. And, oh, we got to watch this. We got to watch that. Or we got to watch this. We got to watch that. And 20, what matters? Those are the things. This is what I talk about. My show is about reality of life. And the reality is all of us. I grew up in a world of, you know, people around people who are addicted. From my father to my sister. And it's a horrible, horrible situation.
City of Everett has now filed a lawsuit against the maker of the painkiller, Purdue Pharma. Lawsuit claims Purdue knowingly, recklessly, and/or negligently supplied OxyContin to suspicious physicians and pharmacies.
Dr. Dow, who we'll touch on a little bit later, what did he get his thing taken away for? When last I checked, giving away and basically being the doctor you shop when you need opioids, OxyContin, things of that nature. Greed, it's simple, it's easy. And sometimes doctors think they're doing the right thing. This is, it is an epidemic. 90 people a day. 90 people a day. And a lot of times when you talk to people, what is it? It starts out, they got a back injury, right? They got a work injury. They hurt their knee. And all of a sudden it starts to ramp up. And then it starts to ramp up. And over time, what ends up happening is they start to lose complete control of it. It overtakes their life. They start doctor shopping. It starts to ruin their life. It ruins their relationship. It ruins their friends. They lose everything. And then they end up in the back of a car or in the front of the car with a needle in their arm because they're looking for two bits of cheap heroin. And there's a baby in the back. Sure, those people didn't start out that way. But because of how people are able to gather this and use it, and then it's just an easy step over to something like heroin, that's a scary, scary thing.
I believe it's about greed, and they need to be held accountable to make our community whole.
I'm not going to blame all doctors, because I don't think it's all doctors. In fact, I know it's not all doctors. Most doctors are trying to do the right thing. Most doctors are trying to be as cautious as possible in situations. But it doesn't always end up that way. It doesn't. But this is the epidemic, and the difference is it's also the people. You know, in the 80s, cocaine was kind of the hip thing to do, right? But crack was that cheap stuff. Heroin was, ugh. Opioids are great, and they're easy, and a doctor gives them to you. And we're worried about marijuana, right? We're worried about marijuana. We're worried, and we're having a debate on whether or not marijuana should be legal. When nobody has ever died from marijuana overdose, right? Nobody's ever died. You could try it, and you still can't do it. You'd have to smoke so much of it. You can't do it. But oh, opioids. They're everywhere. And that's scary. That's one of those things. I want no part of them. Whenever I've had knee surgery on a few occasions, I want nothing to do with any of those painkillers or any of that stuff, because there's just, it's, I always knew, I'm like, that's the last thing I, and this is long before it became the thing. I just won't do it. I'll fight through the pain. And I think a lot of you out there do the same thing. But the addictiveness of it and what it does to your brain. And it's scary. But when we talk about all of this craziness about 24/7 news that covers all of these things that in real life, it's just noise. When stuff like this in real life, killing 90 people a day, and probably more than that, based on the fact that they believe it's an underestimation of what's going on. That to me is real news. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, ChadBensonShow.com, chat at ChadBensonShow.com. You can text the program, 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Irreverent? Yeah. So what? It's the Chad Benson Show.
If unreasonable force and violence is used under a set of circumstances, the common carrier, United Airlines, in this case, is responsible.
That right there was Thomas Dimitro, who is apparently now the I don't know if he's representing the bunny yet. But he's definitely representing a lot of folks who've had issues with airplanes. Dr. Dow and United, are you ready for this? They already settled. They settled already. Dr. Dow, how excited are you?
Oh, my God. What are you doing?
We're getting him paid, lady. That's what we're doing. Dr. Dow and United have settled today. We were trying to figure out. I can't even imagine. Now, producer Phil is with the czar. The czar said, producer Anthony, $5 million, $3 to $5 million. You and I, I put it about that $1.5 million range because I think he got $1 million out of it. Other people are saying he got more. I may be underestimating. I mean, I was thinking about this. Gretchen Carlson got $20 million. Now, I don't know what she went through, how long it took for her to get that from Roger Ailes and Fox. And I don't know how long that took, but I think it was right around $20 million, if I'm correct. So I don't know. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're underestimating here. Maybe it is a lot more. Maybe it is. Maybe it is a ton of money. Maybe he gets $5 million. We're never going to know about it because they don't want you to know about it. And they want it to go away as fast as possible. And when you have a company that is public, even though it seems like $5 or $10 million, which the insurance is going to carry, even though you have that, you know, they'll probably pay that off, or they may even just write it off themselves. So it's not worth the insurance doing it. You've got a ton of money. You have to understand that they can't afford a prolonged issue because it affects the stock. All right. And Oscar Munoz, who's the president or the CEO, not the president. They told him he's not going to be the president, by the way. They already told him you're not going to be the president because of this, because of this. They took out a full-page ad in the Washington Post today to apologize for recent violent removal of said passenger. The letter-style ad signed by CEO Oscar Munoz is titled "Actions Speak Louder Than Words" and calls what happens shameful before going on to outline the new policies meant to prevent a similar incident from happening again. According to the ad, the airline will now what they're going to do is the minute you get on the plane and you're in your seat, they will not, unless it's an absolute emergency, all right, that somebody has to be on there, you're not going to be asked to get off. So the minute you get inside and your butt's in the seat, you're safe to stay there. They will offer up to $10,000 as well as incentives, right? They're eliminating the red tape on permanently lost bags by introducing a no-questions-asked $1,500 reimbursement for bags. And they have vowed never, ever, 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 ever to allow law enforcement to remove boarded passengers except for a matter of security. So if somebody's violent, if somebody is poses a threat to the people on the plane, at that point in time, they have to, right? Because you can't ask your people on United to go, hey, is there any way you guys can get this guy off the plane? Because, you know, after what happened, right? So it's very interesting. But you guys remember this whole thing? They asked if a lawsuit was possible. And this is what Mr. Dimitro or whatever his name is, Mr. Moneybag said.
Will there be a lawsuit? Yeah, probably. Dr. Dow has come to understand that he's the guy to stand up for passengers.
He stood up for him for about, what, 3 weeks? And then he got paid. Now he's going to sit his ass down and shut up. That's what the guy's saying. Sit your ass down and shut up because you got paid. And that's what they want him to do. They want him to sit down. They want him to be quiet. And they want him to go away. They want this to go away as fast as possible. They do. And now you've got other issues happening on airlines. There's a Delta incident where a guy had to go to the bathroom. And they were on the tarmac, as they would say, taxiing for 30-plus minutes. And he got up and he went to the bathroom. And, you know, he was then, there was an issue. They pulled the plane over. The pilot looked back and said, don't make me pull this plane over. They pulled the plane back to where everybody got on, and they all got off, and he was ceremoniously not allowed back on the plane. So there's a lot of, but this is what happens, right? Because one thing happened, and now everything is coming. Oh, this is what happened. There's millions of people flying every single day. One incident that takes place gets blown out of proportions. But as we're next week, Anthony is flying, and we are doing our best to figure out how we can get his ass whooped and filmed, and we can all get paid. It's going to trickle down economics, people. Anthony's going to make a lot of money getting his ass whooped. We'll feel sorry for him. He gets paid. I'll do some pass-through income to you guys. It's a great thing. It's a great thing. We're super excited. For the money he gets, you guys could have dragged me down the aisle naked, and everybody could have hit me with a stick. Chad, that's rude. The Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show Twitter, C-H-A-D-B-E-N-S-O-N. Rob O'Neill joins us next. Famous for a lot of things, but the most famous of all, he killed Osama bin Laden. He's going to join us next right ahead on the Chad Benson Show.
Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Tell you what, when you talk about American heroes, we look back at time and we think about all these legends from the West and whatnot, and the likes of Patton. But there are other heroes out there that are more recent. And this guy's got a brand new book out, and I think I'd put him right in that category. Rob O'Neill joins us now. The book's called The Operator. And, of course, you are the man. By the way, when I've read excerpts of the book, a good portion of it. And let me tell you something. You know, you've got this guy's a legend among legends, and when we'll get into it here, he's getting ready to join us just to jump back on us, but it's crazy. Hey, Rob, thanks. Sorry about that. Hey, listen, you know, before we talk about you got to that night, you got your book out, The Operator, do we have a broken heart to thank the world for you getting bin Laden? Because the reason I think that you may have joined the Navy is because you got basically dumped.
I got dumped. I joined the Navy kind of by accident because growing up in Butte, Montana, I got dumped. The easiest way to get out is to join the military, so I tried to join the Marine Corps, and just as luck would have it, the Marine wasn't in the office, and the Navy guy was. So I went in to ask the Navy guy where the Marine was, and the only reason I went in there was because I had two of my Marine Corps friends tell me that the, you know, tongue-in-cheek, that the Navy is actually part of the Department of the Navy. It's just the men's department. So that was it. I went in for that reason.
You know, you talk about you grew up in Butte, Montana, and you'd probably have. Did you ever see the ocean? I mean, have you ever seen the ocean until you saw the ocean?
I'd sort of seen it once in a while, never been in it, and I didn't grow up swimming. I didn't really know how to swim, so the Navy chief that recruited me was pretty slick about it. He told me, you know, if you want to be a sniper, you can do it in the Navy. All you got to do is be a SEAL first, no big deal, and kind of brushed over it. So I signed up, and believe me, I started drinking from the fire hose. I learned the hard way that, you know. But what I did, though, is, you know, coming from Butte, Montana, and ending up a Navy SEAL in Bin Laden's bedroom. And the whole premise of the book is it doesn't matter where you're from or what you look like. You can do anything as long as you never quit and stay, you know, avoid the negativity, stay positive.
You know, you talk about, you know, what you look like, because you said, you know, you actually took a guy hunting that was a special forces guy. And, you know, he brought the whole pack with him and stuff. And you were kind of surprised because this wasn't a guy that was like 6'8" and built like Dolph Lundgren. It was just a normal looking guy.
He was a normal looking guy with a positive attitude. And it was actually, you know, I took him hiking up the mountain. I knew the mountain really well. I took him up in the dark. And normally when I was elk hunting, I would take a few breaks on this hike. But I'm like, this guy's a special operator. I need to just haul the mail the entire time. So I did one of the hardest hikes of my life. And he didn't quit behind me, but he did tell me later in the day, he's like, I don't know what you were thinking. You need to stop. But that's a pretty good sense of direction in the dark. So it was encouraging, but it was just cool to see. And a lot of these guys, a lot of these operators, because that's what this book is about, the life of the operator. They're normal guys, most of them, just with really positive, never quit, can-do attitudes and great senses of humor. They're really great people. That, I mean, we're talking people that mow their lawn one day, can barely afford their mortgage, and then they're being called to jump into the Indian Ocean that day to rescue someone from Somali pirates. I've seen it all happen, and it's in my book.
His name is Rob O'Neill. The book's called The Operator. Speaking of, you know, you've got this book and you've written this, and if somebody's to read the book, not really know the story of you and what has happened, you know, I've heard of you, but not really know the story, what do you want them to take away from it?
I just want them to take away the attitude that you can do whatever you want. I mean, this is like I said, none of it was supposed to happen. I was never going to join the military. I certainly wasn't going to make it a career. But just because what you take away from it is life happens around you as you're making a plan. The perfect plan rarely – it only exists in the planning room. Once you go to do something, it changes. I mean, even the demand rate. We planned the perfect plan. None of it happened. The helicopter crashed in the front yard. All kinds of stuff went bad. But just because we kept a good attitude and didn't panic and, stayed with our tactics, we were able to do it successfully. And that's common in life, the never quitting. Even with, like, I met some of my instructors in SEAL training in the book. Some of the best advice I got was very simple. When you feel like quitting, which you will, don't quit now. Quit tomorrow. And it's that simple. Just keep doing it.
You know, it's amazing because I think people think, obviously, the Bin Laden raid, the whole nine yards, but the stuff that you've been a part of, including the Captain Phillips and Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor, you've been a part of, well, for a lot of people, a bunch of great movies. But on top of that, it was real life, and you're actually a part of that. When you watch it, like, you know, even when you watch the Bin Laden movie, do you think, okay, who's going to play me and which guy am I?
Yeah, you know, those thoughts do cross my mind. And then when I watch any action movie, just because I was a Navy SEAL for so long, I can pick it apart and let it, you know, ruin the movie. But I enjoy those movies. They're a little bit accurate, but not close. You know, and you wonder who plays whom, and there's always there's funny little subtleties in there. But yeah, I mean, because of a positive attitude and a great team, I was a part of the rescue for the lone survivor, and I was a part of the rescue for Captain Phillips, and I was part of the team. We were on the base when even Bo Bergdahl walked off, and we attempted to rescue him about 19 or 20 times, to the point where we were so close that I had the ransom money the Taliban paid in my hands. And obviously, the Bin Laden raid, I was part of that great team. It's an honor to work with those guys. Very proud of all those guys. And you know, we were in Iraq in 2006, 2007, fighting during the awakening, and we fought everywhere from Al-Asad, Ramadi, Fallujah, Baghdad, and just – like I was mentioning, like the Bin Laden raid was I've done over 400 combat missions. Most of the guys on the team had at that point. So we're talking like chapter 22 or 23 of the book. We'll talk about Bin Laden. But and what's nice about it, because this is the first book about the Bin Laden raid that was approved by the Pentagon. I went through the process and submitted everything, and they read it. A lot of departments read it, and they approved it. So this is it feels good to do it the right way and have the story be legitimate.
Talking to Rob O'Neill, his new book's called The Operator. Take us to that night. I mean, when did you know that, okay, we're going for some hype, you know, this is somebody that we're going after, that the world wants dead. When did you get the idea that, like, we're going for Bin Laden?
Well, they didn't tell us at first. They told us about 2 days later for sure, but we figured it out just sitting around and listening to our leaders talk. And, you know, it was even before we started training for that mission. It was very, very cool that the commanding officer of our SEAL team came in the room and he just said, the reason you're here, this is as close as we've ever been to Osama bin Laden. And we kind of looked around the room, and everyone was a professional. And I remember one guy saying, all right, cool, we going right now? We're ready. We obviously didn't go then, but we trained for a couple of weeks. We went overseas. That we were given the green light, and then we launched on. So we knew going in who we were going after. We knew it was a very high probability of dying, or at least not coming back. We all considered it a one-way mission, but it was worth it to defend this country, to sort of avenge the victims and families of 9/11, and close the chapter, hopefully.
And you go into that night, like you said, you guys, right off the bat, boom, what are the helicopters? Okay, so you, not even skipping a beat, this is what life is, you guys move on forward, and then it all starts to happen. And did you know, how fast did it happen? When you turn that corner, you go up there, and, there's over the shoulder of his wife or whatever, there he is. Did you know, okay, this is the dude, or?
Yeah, when I saw him, I instantly knew, but before that, even going through the house and going up the stairs, I was in a very fortunate spot because I was supposed to land on the roof with the rest of my team, but we didn't. We landed on the north side outside, so we had to come in. So I was able to watch everybody work, and it was just so cool to watch these guys know they probably weren't going to live through this, but they just maintained their composure. They did their jobs, even going up the stairs where we knew we'd run into Khalid bin Laden, his son, watching my team take care of that, and even being to a point, wow, what I saw there, I was like, it's in the book. And I said, I hope I live through tonight because people need to know what these guys did. And then we kept going up the stairs, and that's where I came into the position of the number two man. The number one man in front of me was kind of letting me know it's time to go. We got to go up these stairs. At the end of the stairs was a curtain, and we knew there'd be suicide bombers. So we went up the stairs. And for me, I don't know what he was thinking, but I wasn't thinking bravery or bravado. I was thinking I'm just tired of thinking about it. Let's just get it over with. And we went up. I watched him jump on what he thought were suicide bombers. So he gave his life to the operator behind him. He didn't know it was me, but it was. Once he did that, I turned the corner into a bedroom, and then 3 feet in front of me was Osama bin Laden. He had his hands on his wife's shoulder, who was shorter and in front of him. And I did a quick positive identity, like, that's him. He's taller than I thought, though, skinnier. Gray beard is shorter than I thought. That's his nose. He's a threat. He's not surrendering. I considered him a suicide bomber, so I dealt with him by taking shots to his head. I shot him 3 times, and then it was over even before I could say anything.
You canoed him. We know you canoed him. Come on, Rob. You canoed his head.
That thing's not even a thing. He looks like someone that got shot in the head because he did get shot in the head, but that whole canoe thing was made up by someone that had imagination. We're the good guys. We don't want to use more ammo than we need because we might need it for days at a time.
Let me ask you this. Okay, so you know you've done it that night. You guys are on your way back. The mission's successful. When does it sink in, that I just killed the most wanted man maybe in the history of the world, and I can't tell anybody?
that's quite a secret to keep, believe me. It actually started to sink in about five or six seconds after I shot him. Because I had to move his wife to the bed. I saw his 2-year-old son, 2 or 3, standing there. And as a father, I remember thinking, this poor kid's got nothing to do with this. And I picked him up and put him next to his mom. And then as that happened, I sort of froze. And the other SEALs were coming in the room. And a guy came up to me and he said, hey, are you okay? And I just responded with, yeah, what do we do now? And he kind of laughed and said, now we go find the computers, man. We've done this hundreds of times. And I said, you're right. I'm back. Holy crap. He said, yeah, man, you just killed Osama bin Laden. Like, your life just changed.
Yeah. And it's like, and you can't tell anybody. Like, you hope you get some great stories to tell all your friends, but you can't tell anybody. You just killed the world's most wanted man.
Yeah.
When did your wife and family find out it was you? And what was it like when they found out?
A lot of people found out before we even got back to our home base in Virginia, because we did that. We had to do a lot of debriefing and some DNA stuff, and then we took a long flight home from Afghanistan to Virginia. And during that long flight, word had started to spread wildly, so a lot of people there already knew before I got there. And so in the community of Virginia, it started to spread, and it turned into one of those, they don't tell anybody, but – and the first question is, well, who shot him? And so the word spread. It was a really, really poorly kept secret for a while.
Well, Tell you what, man, the book, I've read, like I said, I've read several long excerpts of it. It's great. I appreciate you coming on today. I know you're busy. I appreciate you. Good luck on the book, and we hope to talk to you soon. And once again, I think the families of 9/11 and this country, thank you, because just not only for this, but for the 400-plus missions that you did in service of our country, and I don't think anybody can ever thank you enough. And I know my son just lives for the SEALs, and we really appreciate you allowing us to sleep well at night.
Well, that means a lot. Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk to your audience.
Thanks so much. Appreciate that. Rob O'Neill right there. Great interview and an amazing story of and this book is, again, I've read a good portion of it. And I will tell you this right now. Yes, it's about positivity. It's about all of these things. But to know that this guy went on 400-plus missions, not only did he not lose a guy, they didn't have anybody injured. It's the insanity of it all, the greatness of what we are able to do. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
With the first pick in the 2017 NFL Draft, the Cleveland Browns select
Chad Benson,
Myles Garrett, defensive end, Texas A&M.
I really thought this was the year. Can you imagine what that's like, though? I mean, think about this. You're 20, 21 years old. You have got the world at your feet. You've already got some money in the bank because let me tell you how it works with agents. You sign on with, you know, whoever your agent ends up being, right? So you sign on with them, but you're not going to get paid until, you know, you think, well, I'm not going to get paid. That's where you're wrong. What ends up happening is these guys will front you, you know, X amount of dollars, knowing full well they're going to recoup it when your money comes. And now the negotiation starts, knowing full well that Myles Garrett is the number one pick based on the fact that it came out so early today that it was it. Chances are he's already got the deal is done because the way the NFL does it now, it used to be crazy, right? Back in the day, you make a wrong pick in the first round, you could be destroyed for several years because you had to pay so much money against the cap. Nowadays, there's only so much you can, you know, wherever you're picked, there's an allotted amount of money you can get as far as guaranteed. So that first contract really benefits the teams, which a lot of those guys wanted because it makes it easier for you know, your older guys to get paid. Get paid, baby, and that's what it's about. Now, producer Phil is a massive fan of the Washington Redskins. You guys pick in about 20 minutes or so. So are you going defense, Phil? Is that what you're feeling?
I'm thinking defense would be good, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know what, though? Or do you guys do something crazy because you don't think you're going to be able to hold on to your quarterback and you get rid of him? First quarterback taken was Mitch Trubisky. He was the second player picked. Actually, the 49ers traded backwards, and the Bears traded up one, so they just flip-flopped. And Trubisky is going to be the, you know, they just gave a ton of money to Mike Glennon. Everybody's like, oh, my God, the Chicago Bears gave all that money. Here's the thing about pro football, and unlike other sports, so, and this is the thing I think is going to change so much in sports, especially with the, you know, yesterday, I don't know if you guys saw this, but what's his name retired? Dale Earnhardt Jr. This is last year racing, and he's worried. He's already going to donate his brain to science. He's only 42 years old. He's married. He's worried about it. He's had some issues already with concussions. But the word guarantee. So when you see a guy in the NFL sign a contract that's 4 years and $100 million, you're like, oh, my God. Then you look and realize only $15 million of it's guaranteed, meaning they can get out of it after that. So it's very little. Baseball's the opposite. Right? Baseball, man, that stuff's guaranteed. Football, no. Basketball, it's all guaranteed, right? NHL, by and large, most of it's guaranteed. They have some things called two-way contracts and stuff. But football is the sport we watch the most. It's the sport that is a national pastime now, really. It's not even that. It's a national obsession. But at the same time, man, there's no guarantee in that stuff. There isn't. But I love to hear the stories about these guys, these rookies, and they're like, what was it like? And I just remember I was last year, I was watching somebody, and I think it was Von Miller or whatever, and they were talking to him about it, and he said he got his paycheck. He got the first check. He got a signing bonus the day, so he signs his contract, and they literally hand him a check for like $11 million. And he said he drove around with it, and he went, and he just, you know, he put it in the bank. And could you imagine being that teller, right? Like, you're there, he's like, I'd like to deposit this. And you're like, okay, and you've got $38.17 in the bank. Yeah, and can you put this $11 million with that? And they're, you know, they're calling somebody over. You better come over. This guy's got a check for $11 million. I don't know if it's good. And it's like, yeah, it's good. We know who he is. Oh, goodness. Solid fun day today. Absolutely. Solid fun day. We'll do it again tomorrow, but we'll do it better, and we'll do it in 3D. I want to thank Rob O'Neill for coming on. Good guy. American hero. Check a podcast out, ChadBensonShow.com there. You can always text the program, 323-538-2403. Man, I tell you what, it's a Thursday, but it sure feels like a Thursday. Tomorrow, we guarantee Donut Friday is going to be delicious. For Phil, for Anthony, my name's Chad Benson. As always, I bid you all adieu. Night-night, Jack.
This is the Chad Benson Show.